State officials say they have no immediate plans to move the Marine Highway Reservation's office from Juneau to Ketchikan, but they confirm it is on a long-term list of possible system changes. The office remained in the capital city when most other headquarters functions were relocated about 7 years ago. Ferry Chief Mike Newsel says the Ketchikan headquarters does not have the space or bandwidth capacity needed for reservations.
It's not moving yet, or maybe never moving, but it's being studied based on looking at all different efficiencies and ways to make the Marine Highway System more efficient. We look at all avenues to do that.
The reservations office employs 22 people in a building next to the State Transportation Department's Southeast Regional Office off of Glacier Highway. Newsel says a move has been on a list of budget review items for several years without action.
It was in there again this year in that discussion as a potential efficiency for the Marine Highway System to take advantage of using that staff more than just for reservations, but making it more of a combined reservations and marketing staff. And right now our marketing staff is in Ketchikan and our reservation staff is in Juneau.
Marine Highway System's headquarters is in the old Ketchikan Pulp Company's administration building in Ward Cove. State officials are considering options for a new building at a nearby site. They've purchased land and have money for design. The fast ferry Fairweather ended at Sitka sailing yesterday because of problems with its automated engineering system. The ship left Juneau for Sitka in the morning but turned around before entering Sturgis Narrows, which usually has strong currents. It returned to Juneau for repairs. The ferry's engine room is unstaffed, and the equipment is controlled and monitored by a computer. Newsel says the problem is with that system and not the engines. He expects the Fairweather to be ready in time for today's sailing to and from Sitka. A former fisheries aide to Senator Lisa Murkowski is expected in federal court today in Anchorage to enter a plea admitting that he falsified fishing records. Arnie Fugelvog has said that the falsified records earned him an extra $100,000 from commercial fishing of sable fish in Alaska. He signed a plea agreement in April, but it was made public only last week, the day after he resigned from Murkowski's staff. Murkowski says Fugelvog told her about the case June 29th. She says he told her he faced a big fine and possible prison time. Murkowski says she asked for his resignation but let him remain because he told her the resolution was expected August 1st. She says she didn't know until last week that he had signed a plea deal. The subsistence litigation of Mentasta elder Katie John was back in court recently when a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals held hearings in Anchorage. John's first case went to the U.S. Supreme Court and established that Congress intended through Title VIII of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, to protect fish and game, including navigable waters off of Alaska. After the rulemaking from that decision, the state of Alaska asked an en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit to review the case. The decision in favor of John was reaffirmed. The state's latest challenge contends the regulations expanded federal authority to waters beyond what Congress intended. Heather Kendall Miller is the Native American Rights Fund attorney who has argued the case for Katie John. Kendall Miller says the regulations don't go far enough.
The regulations were limited to just those waters within the conservation boundaries, but should have extended to those waters in between.
Kendall Miller argued because the regulations limit the scope of the federal government's jurisdiction to the conservation unit area boundaries, it does not identify and extend authority over the additional waters required for migrating fish to ensure healthy populations that will support subsistence.
Most villages aren't located inside the conservation system units, and therefore the federal rule doesn't protect most subsistence fishing. And that cannot be what Congress intended when it passed Title VIII of ANILCA to protect subsistence fishing.
Kendall Miller says it could be 4 months or more before the Ninth Circuit makes a decision, but she says even after justices rule in that case, it may not be the end of litigation.
Katie John is now 96 years old. She's been litigating for over 20 years, all with the goal of trying to protect subsistence fishing, which is only 1% of the overall fishery. And until we have a management program in place that does so, I think litigation will continue.
The state has the right to ask for further review if the Ninth Circuit again decides against the state. They can ask again for an en banc or full panel review of 11 judges. Kendall Miller says that could be difficult based on the last en banc the state was granted and the ongoing litigation.
It was announced in its decision that it felt that it had been an unnecessary thing to do and that the state got two bites at the apple. So given that prior, dismay at having taken the case back up again when it viewed it to be unnecessary, I think that might be difficult to ask the court again, but one never knows.
State Assistant Attorney General Mike Mitchell, who represented the Parnell administration in the latest round in this case, declined to comment. A jack-up oil drilling rig is now moving into position to begin exploratory drilling in Cook Inlet. Steve Sutherland, strategic officer for the Texas-based Escapeda Oil, says the company got clearance from Customs and Border Protection to begin moving the rig out of Ketchumack Bay yesterday. During the next week, it will be put in place. The legs will be extended to the sea floor, and the rig will be staffed by a crew of about 54 people to begin drilling.
I would say that we'll commence drilling operations in roughly a week. I mean, we don't want to hurry. We want to make sure that everything is set up properly. But, again, we don't want to dally around because we'd planned to start this thing when the birds were flying north, and I saw some birds flying south a few moments ago.
The company may be in violation of the Jones Act because it used a Chinese cargo vessel to take the rig around South America. Sutherland would not offer much comment on what federal authorities may do next.
There are so many permutations, it's very difficult to say at this point.
The rig was dry docked in Canada and reloaded aboard an American barge for its trip into U.S. waters. If all goes as planned, Escapeda will qualify for at least $25 million in state tax credits for his first well. There's another $22.5 million for the second well and $20 million for the third. Escapeda owner Danny Davis says his expenses are sure to exceed the amount of those credits, but Sutherland says he's pretty happy to see the rig, called the Spartan 151, finally in Cook Inlet.
I flew over it when it came in, and I've seen it with my own eyes, and it's been a long pull with many challenges, but, you know, at this point, it's very gratifying. We're tired, but we're ready to move forward, and we're going to be in Alaska for many years to come.
The geological prospect the company will drill is north of Nikiski and is called the Kitchen Lights Unit. The rig will have to be pulled up once the inlet starts icing up. Further out west, a lava dome continues growing inside the Cleveland volcano on the Aleutian Chain. Steve McNutt of the Alaska Volcano Observatory says cloud cover over the volcano has been intermittent this week, but satellite photos taken on Monday still show a hot lava dome about 60 meters or over 180 feet in diameter at the bottom of the crater. The Alaska Volcano Observatory does not have a real-time seismic network on the Cleveland volcano, and McNutt says they have to rely on satellite imagery and any first-hand observations. He says an explosive eruption is still possible.
We don't have any specific basis for it, but by analogy with other volcanoes elsewhere, sometimes dome growth like this just goes on and that's it, or other times, particularly if it becomes sealed up and the pressure builds up, then you can have an explosive eruption.
The Cleveland volcano is located on a remote, uninhabited island in the Aleutian Chain. It poses a minimal risk to humans on the ground, but an explosive eruption could send ash into the atmosphere and disrupt air travel in the area.